Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.
Friend, and welcome to Foul Play. Under the cover of darkness, a quiet and covert killer emerges from the shadows, knowing exactly what he is going to do. In those crucial minutes that follow, he is unmerciful in his violent attacks on unsuspecting innocent young victims. Follow us into those shadows as we explore one of America's most notorious unsolved serial killer cases, the Zodiac. With a chilling disregard for human life, this is a serial killer who left a trail of terror across Northern California in 1968 and 1969. But his twisted game didn't end there. The Zodiac taunted police and the media with cryptic letters, puzzles, and postcards, basking in the attention he gained. In this gripping new series, we'll delve deep into the case, exploring every twist and turn in the hunt for this perplexing cryptic killer. With 5 known murders and 2 surviving victims, the Zodiac's trail of destruction is chilling. And yet, despite decades of investigation, his true identity remains a mystery. This is a complicated case with a long history, and we're going to bring you each element in bite-sized pieces as we follow the leads from start to finish. With a case this complex and compelling, it's sure to be a bumpy ride.
On December the 20th, 1968, it was a dark and freezing night in Benicia, California, a city that sits in Solano County, inside San Francisco Bay. As 11:30 p.m. rolled around, Officer Pierre Bidou and his partner drove into the parking lot of the police department on E.L. Street. Putting the vehicle into gear, their radio started to crackle, and they heard the voice of the dispatcher. A local resident had frantically flashed her headlights and beeped her horn at Captain David Pitter's squad car in town just 5 minutes earlier. Stella Borgia, at the time this happened, reported to him she lived locally and had been driving to Benicia to collect her 13-year-old son. As she rounded the sweeping bend in Lake Herman Road, a few miles back she saw the body of a woman lying motionless on the pavement. A single vehicle was parked in the turnout spot at Benicia Water Treatment Plant, just yards behind her body. She thought she could also see another body on the ground next to the vehicle with the door open. Unsure if it was a vehicle accident or something more sinister, the dispatcher was requesting backup to attend the scene. Lake Herman Road was a long, quiet country road with green, rolling fields on either side and no streetlights. It runs from the U.S. Transportation Department over towards Vallejo for 6 miles, ending at the Columbus Parkway intersection by Blue Rock Springs. At that time of night, it was pitch black, with only vehicle headlights lighting up the road ahead. The turnout the dispatcher was referring to was about halfway along this route. It was similar to a rest area, but without any facilities at the spot. It was used as a parking area, a place to pull off the road safely and park for a while. This spot on Lake Herman Road served as the entrance to the water plant, The local teenagers used it when on dates, as somewhere they could park in private. Apart from these teenagers from local schools and shift workers, this wasn't a road used very much. It was known to be quiet, especially at night, and very dark. As the dispatcher signed off, the officers immediately backed out of their parked position and made their way back to the main road. They looked at each other confused. They had just been at Lake Herman Road less than 15 minutes ago on their way back to the station. They hadn't seen anything at all. Whatever had happened out there happened minutes ago. They had been out executing a search warrant on a cabin along that road. They had seized a small amount of marijuana that they had to sign into evidence at the station. They had passed the exact spot where the witness had reported seeing a body. That turnout had been quiet and dark as they had passed by. Their headlights illuminated the patch of land with fencing around the edges as they drove around the curve that it sits on. As their headlights swept across the cold, dark ground, they hadn't fallen upon the body of a young woman.
It took them less than 10 minutes to get back to the turnout. They were not prepared for what awaited them. Parked in the middle of the dark pavement, with the nose of the vehicle pointing east, was a two-tone tan-collared 1961 Rambler station wagon. It was parked about 10 feet from the fencing, more in the middle of the turnout space than where you would expect a person to pull in and secure the parking brake. The engine was silent, but the station wagon's headlights were still on and shining brightly into the night. About 28 feet from the back of the station wagon lay the body of a young woman. She was wearing a purple dress with white cuffs and a white collar in stark contrast to her dark hair. Lying on her front with blood visible on her back and on the ground beneath her, she showed no signs of life. Five 22 caliber shell casings lay haphazardly around her. This young lady had not been struck by a vehicle or dropped to the ground in a medical emergency. Her death had not been natural. Captain Daniel Pitta, the officer the witness had flagged down in Benicia, was at the scene when they arrived. All three made their way over to the Rambler and around to the opposite side. The passenger's door of the vehicle was still open. As their gaze dropped down, they could see a young man. It looked almost as if he had fallen out of the vehicle and onto the ground. He had blood all over his left ear, in his hair, and down his neck. His light blue long-sleeved shirt was stained with blood. He was wearing brown corduroy pants, black socks, and tan leather shoes. Immediate checks found he was still breathing, but barely. Medics quickly lifted the young man into an ambulance and rushed him to Vallejo General Hospital. Something terrible had happened here that night. As Detective Sergeant Lundblad arrived at the scene at 12:05 a.m., word came through that the young man had been pronounced dead on arrival at the hospital. As the detective assessed the scene, he noted there was no weapon. The possibility of this being a murder-suicide was ruled out. These two teenagers had been brutally murdered in the earlier hours of the night, in a remote, quiet, and very dark location. Frozen ground meant any tire marks from other vehicles were barely visible and could not provide any clues.
Those two victims were 16-year-old Betty Lou Jensen and 17-year-old David Arthur Faraday, teenagers who had been out on their very first official date together. They had met just a week earlier while helping to decorate the hall at Pythian Castle in Vallejo for a music festival that was due there. It was an instant attraction and a promising start to a potential blossoming relationship. David was driving his mum's Rambler as he picked Betty up at around 8 p.m. that night. On the advice of her 24-year-old sister, Melody, Betty Lou had introduced David to her parents before they left. They said they were going to a pre-Christmas concert at Betty's school, Hogan High School, in Vallejo, and then on to a party afterwards. They were to be home by 11 p.m. that evening. Sitting 30 miles north of San Francisco, Vallejo was just under 8 miles away from Benicia. David had told his younger sister, as he dropped her off for a meeting she was attending earlier that evening, that he planned on going to Lake Herman Road that night. He told her some high school kids were going to gather there and he wanted to join them. A witness reported the couple left the concert at around 10 p.m. By then, the December night air was crisp, with the ground already starting to freeze over in the winter temperatures. An hour later, Peggy and Homer Yaw were driving along Lake Herman Road and directly past the turnout. There, they remembered seeing a station wagon parked up with a male and female inside. 15 minutes later, James Owen passed the spot. He was on his way to a night shift in Benicia. He saw David's Rambler parked just like the Yaws, but he remembered a second vehicle parked between 4 and 10 feet away. Just 5 minutes later, Stella Medeiros would drive past the turnout on her way to Benicia, spotting the bodies on the ground. She had raced to Benicia just over 3 miles away at 70 miles an hour to get help. Remember, this was 1968. There were no cell phones back then. No internet to speak of. Police vehicles had radios to communicate with dispatch, but computers would not find their way into the police stations and part of daily life for police officers until the early 70s. At the time Betty Lou and David were murdered, communication wasn't as easy as it is now. As detectives worked the scene and continued interviewing anyone in the area on that night, it became abundantly clear that they had very little to work with.
Sergeant, could you briefly describe what apparently happened last night?
Yes, we had a double homicide that took place down on a county road about sometime after 11 o'clock last night. Double homicide involving victims were a 16-year-old girl and a 17-year-old boy. The boy was an Eagle Scout. The girl was on her first date, and there's no record of any misbehavior on either one of them.
How did this incident occur, apparently?
Well, they were shot.
What were the circumstances involved?
Possibly they were ordered out of the car by the responsible, and the boy was shot right at the side of the car, and the girl apparently tried to run, and she was shot and found 28 feet further on.
There was one bullet hole that penetrated one of the windows of the car. Was this a stray bullet, or was this one of the bullets that hit the victim and went on through?
This could be a stray bullet or a warning bullet of some sort that we can't connect it with the bodies, but it's the same type of shell.
Why did this happen?
It was a senseless murder, I believe.
Do you have any idea what the possible motive might be for this killing?
We have no motive at this time.
The turnout space where these killings happened actually sits in Solano County, with a crossover to Benicia. Officially, this meant it was the Solano County Sheriff's Office who took the lead, and Benicia officers who assisted in the case. David had been shot once in his left ear. Coroner Dan Horan found powder burns on his skin, indicating the killer had pressed the gun against David's ear as he fired. His murder was a cold-blooded and terrifying execution. Betty Lou had 5 gunshot wounds to her back, all very close together. 3 of the shots had gone right through her body. A trail of her blood could be seen leading from the car to the spot where she had fallen. Betty Lou was pronounced dead at the scene by Dr. Byron Sanford, who had attended from Benicia. It was theorized that the killer had fired into the vehicle to make Betty Lou and David scramble out at 11:15 p.m. that night. David, it seems, was shot as he exited the vehicle, falling straight to the ground as the bullet was fired. It looked like Betty had tried to run in fear, but was shot down from behind. The station wagon provided some indication of what may have happened. The killer had fired at least two shots at the vehicle. One passed through the right rear window, with the damaged pellet being recovered from the floor mat, and the second bullet hit the ceiling, still lodged in place, and was able to be retrieved. There were 10 empty casings found at the scene, indicating 10 shots fired by the killer. All came from the same weapon, a gun the lab identified as a 22 caliber long rifle. A J.C. Higgins automatic pistol was the leading theory on which gun was used in the attack. No one had witnessed what happened in that turnout. Witness statements from drivers passing by were not able to identify another vehicle or person there at that time. There were no signs of fighting or a struggle of any kind, and no evidence of any robbery. This killer was cold and ruthless, and had left no trace of his identity behind. He was the Invisible Man.
Back in 1968, solving these types of crimes without witnesses was laborious and challenging. Crime scene forensics were in their infancy. Blood types could be checked and matched, and bullet casings examined, but DNA was not available then. It's hard to fully envisage now, but officers back then were working almost blind. The city of Benicia was horrified. Murders didn't happen there. Double murders of young teens didn't happen there. It terrified locals not knowing who had done it or why. Teenagers were especially disturbed by what had happened. They couldn't help but ask themselves, were they in danger? Where was safe? For the next 8 months, all was silent. No new leads appeared, and the case was rapidly going cold. That was until one night in July 1969 that caught everybody off guard. Another young couple was killed not far from where Betty Lou and David lost their lives. This time, the killer made a call to the police, claiming responsibility. Brazen and unafraid, his call ended with the chilling words,
"I also killed those kids last year."
As a heightened sense of fear rippled through Benicia and beyond, the local police realized they had a serial killer on their hands. And he wasn't done yet.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.